Just 1 second. We'll have about half an hour of lecture and followed by question answer session. Please, if you have a lot of inquiries, it's nice. And then, while we have the question answer session, we'll serve out vegetarian dinner. Please stay until the end. We also want to give you this cultural experience. Thank you. Sorry.
Thank you. As Advaita Chandra pointed out, is it all right if I sit and talk, or should I stand on?
Whatever you like.
Yeah. Whatever is visually more appealing to you all. Okay. that. There shouldn't be any conflict between science and spirituality, provided we properly understand what science actually is and what spirituality does stand for. Science, in a real sense, is the systematic study of a systematic understanding of a subject through proper observation, research, and study. The science is actually the systematic study of different subjects. Like, science doesn't necessarily mean that only physics, chemistry, and biology are science, or medicine. Science literally means any systematic study is actually science. Say, for example, just as physics is the study of energy, chemistry is the study of matter, biology is the study of life, living entities, mathematics is the study of number, language is a study of expressions of our ideas and thoughts. So if we take science from that point of view, from that understanding, then I'll say spirituality is the science to understand a reality beyond this material nature. Now, the consideration is, does a reality like that exist? Now, let's make a scientific, or if we don't want to point it as scientific at this point, let's make a common sense observation. Let us consider different objects in this room. This table is inert. This chair is inert. We know that matter by nature is inert. Therefore, we call dead matter. So matter by nature is inert, but you and I, we are not inert. We are living. Although our bodies are made of matter, but we are conscious. We are not inert. Now, what causes this unique phenomena in these material bodies, which otherwise or by nature is inert? Now, this is where we actually have to start from. Now, please just ponder over this point. What makes us alive? Now, to make a little systematic approach to the point, I'll say, right now I'm here, you all are thinking that here he is, he's talking to us. Now, if I drop dead, although my body will be lying here, you will say, he is gone. Now, who is that he? who is gone. Obviously, the one that made the body alive, and whose absence made the body dead. Or rather, made the dead body become dead again. Dead body, because it's made of dead matter, therefore this body is by nature dead. Now what made this dead body alive? That is what our actual identity is. When we say I, it is that. Now how do you want to identify him or identify that is a different consideration. But here, as I mentioned, let's make a common sense approach to this topic, to this subject. What is our actual I? Generally, we tend to identify ourselves with the body. This body is me. Who are you? We generally tend to identify ourselves with the body. But actually, is this body our real identity? Let's consider that. When we were 5 years old, what kind of body we had? A little body. We became 15, that body changed. Today, it's a completely different body. The 5-year-old body that I had no semblance to the body I have today or you all have today. The body has changed. But in spite of the change of the body, you are still the same. So who is that you? Well, that has been identified as the soul. In different languages, they have been identified by different names, like soul in English. In Sanskrit, it's Atma. So that is our real identity. Now the question is, what is the soul? Is it a matter, is it a product of some chemical combination? Or is it something that is beyond this material nature? Now let's see the characteristic or the functioning of the soul. The soul functions in such an amazing way that it makes matter become conscious. It makes matter to function in a totally non-material way. Like matter is inert. But because of the presence of the soul, this body made of matter became conscious. It's because of the presence of the soul in the body is alive. It's because of the presence of the soul that the body functions in an amazing way. Like generally, the symptom of life is analyzed in 6 different categories. Or there are 6 symptoms of life. Living entities are born. So birth is one aspect of life. Wherever there is life, there is birth. Whether it is an animal, whether it's a reptile, whether it's a bird, whether it's a human being, or whether it's a tree or a plant. These are all living beings, living entities, and they all are born at some point in time. So birth is the first criteria of life. Then growth. It's born, and then after the birth it gradually grows. Like a seed falls on the ground, grows into a seedling, and then it grows into a tree, then changes. In autumn the leaves fall, in spring the new leaves and flowers appear. These changes are a symptom of life. So birth, growth, changes, reproduction. Life, living entities generate a same species through the process of reproduction. That's the fourth symptom of life. Fifth symptom of life is decay. From boyhood, it grows into youth, and then it gradually becomes old. And then, finally, death. So these are the six symptoms of life. In matter, you won't get these six symptoms. In matter, in inert matter, there won't be any growth as such. Like this table will be standing here for billions of years, but won't even grow by 1 inch. Whereas you and I, we have grown from a baby body to a youth body and so forth. This table will not reproduce. You put two tables together, a third table will not come out of that. So these are the symptoms of life, and this is what discriminates between living entity and inert matter. And although we are in the bodies made of matter, we function in a way which is not characteristic to matter, rather diametrically opposed to the characteristics of matter. So hence, we have to consider that there is a thing called the soul whose presence makes this wonderful activities in the bodies made of matter. So now the study of the soul, the consideration is whether it is important to study this factor, the soul. Now the study of the soul is actually the science of spirituality. It's a science. It shouldn't be treated as a faith. Especially a blind faith. Certain degree of faith is necessary at the beginning to understand any subject. We have to accept the authority of the books, and we have to accept the authority of the teachers. And there is the necessity of the faith at the beginning. But this faith will become justified in course of the progress of understanding of the subject. For example, when you are learning the alphabets, your mother said, this is A, you accepted this is A. You can challenge your mother, why this is A, why this is not Y. No, you accepted A is A and B is B. But as you grew up and started to study, it has been established or experimentally verified that A is A and B is B. So similarly, any subject as we study or as we begin to study, initially certain degree of faith is necessary, but as we progress in that topic, in that subject, that faith is automatically established through our experimental verification of the facts. So that's why this subject also, yes, initially we have to accept with certain degree of faith that yes, a soul exists. At least with our common sense we can understand that it does exist. So now the question is it necessary to study this subject? If we want to study, then how we are going to study it? Where do we begin? How do we begin? To study, we need books. Books means knowledge that has been imparted by the authorities from the past. From their experiences, they have presented it. Those are the books. And we need qualified teachers. Just books are not enough. If I want to become a physicist, I can't just buy some books on the market and study on my own. I have to go to a proper institution and study under the guidance of a qualified teacher. So similarly, this subject also have to be studied in a systematic way under the guidance of qualified teachers. Then only we'll be able to understand this subject properly. And the study of that subject is spirituality or religion. In simple words, I'll say religion actually is the science about the spiritual reality. Another reality exists beyond this material nature, and that is the spiritual reality. And the understanding or the study, systematic study of that subject, is the spirituality or religion. Unfortunately, due to the lack of proper presentation of the subject, due to the lack of qualified teachers, due to the lack of systematic approach to the subject, due to the lack of proper presentation of that topic, this subject has been thoroughly misunderstood. That is the unfortunate aspect. That is the unfortunate condition of the spirituality or religion in today's world. And that's why it has been totally misinterpreted and disregarded by intelligent class of people. Now, if we consider that this is an important topic to understand, as a matter of fact, the reality is that this is the most important subject for all of us. But it has been totally disregarded. And the result is there's total chaos all over the world. Materialism, you are seeing, materialistic progress has given us a lot of promises, but led us to total disappointment. I don't want to get into that. I'm sure you all are quite well aware of that fact. Now, what's the solution? Today's world is facing an incredible calamity. There are problems everywhere. And the reality is no one knows what the solution is. And I will say the real solution lies in the proper understanding of the spiritual science. In the name of science, there is a total disregard for the existence of the soul and a reality beyond our sense perception, and ultimately the acceptance of God. And that is what has led this world to such a critical condition. Now the question is, do we want to solve the problems? And if we want to solve the problems, how are we going to do that? Denying the existence of God, I'm making a jump, because the spiritual reality, or the delving into that topic about the spiritual subject matter, will eventually lead to that ultimate point, God. The supreme spiritual personality, who is the supreme creator, who is the supreme maintainer, is that who we identify as God. Now, disregarding him, we are not actually going to go anywhere. Another approach we can make regarding that, as I told at the very beginning, that here I'm just making a very common sense approach. I'm not just asking to accept something if you cannot really accept it with your common sense or your intelligence. You all are educated very intelligent group of people, therefore I take the liberty to appeal to your common sense, appeal to your intelligence, to systematically and honestly try to analyze or consider at least these points. Just consider, say, you're wearing your watches. If I ask you, did anybody make that? What will be your answer?
Yes.
Naturally, yes. Some of you are wearing your glasses. Did anybody make that? You're wearing your clothes. Did anybody make that? Now, if I come up with a consideration that no, nobody made that, it just fell from nowhere, or there was some chemical combination and your watch appeared. Your watch just fell from the sky. Will you accept it? Will your common sense allow you to accept that? No. Now, let us consider, let's look around this world, in the beautiful world where we are living in, which is so wonderfully maintaining such order, such system. Did anybody make that? What will be the natural response? What will be the common sense response to that? Naturally, yes. Now, who is he? We may not know who he is, but at least we have to accept that somebody made it. Especially when it is maintaining such a beautiful order. Now, to say that it is a product of an accident. Now, will you accept it as science? Such a beautiful order came out of accident? From accident you don't get order, from accident you get chaos. Now look at the world around you. Do you find chaos or order? The sun rises at a specific time every day. So much so that we can calculate 10,000 years from now at exactly at what time the sun will rise in Boston. We can. So systematically the order is being maintained in the nature. Seasons change, and along with the change of the season, wonderful phenomena appear in the world around us. So systematically, everything is being organized. You want to go further? The earth is round. We are on the surface of the earth. And earth is moving with a tremendous speed. What would have naturally happened to us? Just consider a round object. The sun, some things are there on the surface of it and it's moving. What would have happened? Everything would have been thrown into the space. Did it ever happen? Why not? Accident? Give us a break. And you call that science? And this is the unfortunate thing. The most unscientific presentations are being made in the name of science today. The reality is that we have to accept that there is a creator who is very systematically maintaining everything. Just consider, the earth is moving with a tremendous speed. We are on the surface of the earth, and it is due to the gravitational pull we are held on the surface of the earth. What would have happened if the earth stopped to move just for a second? What would have happened? Everything would have collapsed. Since time immemorial, had there been a single instance when that happened? And just consider with a common sense. Is there somebody who is maintaining everything? Now, again, I go back to that point. Is this topic, is this subject need a systematic probing into it? And that study is spirituality. The study of this particular topic is spirituality. Let's just give it a chance. Let's see. Let's go into it. Let's find out. Just as Newton, he decided to find out why the apple always falls on the ground. Why doesn't some apple fly up? Why it always falls on the ground? So he was inquisitive. And as out of his study of that, or in his systematic probing in finding the answer, led to this discovery of gravitational pull. So similarly, let us make a systematic study in that subject and let's see whether some informations are available, and if those informations are there, whether they make any sense. And okay, I'll stop now. If anybody has any question, please feel free to ask. Yes?
Hello, Mark. You know, when you talk about the I and me, it's kind of speaking English to me. You know, it's like it talks, you know, I can ask questions outside English. I suspect if I were born in China or India, it would have a different personality.
No, your I would have been the same, although you would have spoken Chinese. Maybe you'd have, but you'd have asked the same question, who am I?
I think it's sort of like a combination of my culture that I grew up in, you know, even the...
I would say that the cultural aspect would be, in some culture will motivate you to find out who you are, and some culture will not. The materialistic culture will say there's no need to figure out who you are.
The other thought I had was that, you know, we sort of, in a scientific way, realize that universes, like whole galaxies, get born and die. They have like a personality, you know, it's a living entity. This afternoon I was at BU and I was surprised that they described there was this sort of rock within rocks that expands and grows, and it cracks, you know, the other rocks. So it's like non-living material that actually, you know, it's very slow, you know, it takes thousands of years, but it does seem to have some life to it, you know?
Yeah, very, 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 very true.
You know, even the earth and is sort of changing.
Right. The actual understanding will be that even the larger bodies, although apparently appears to be inert, also have soul.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
It's only in relation to us because we're much more, we're faster moving.
Yeah? Right,
We live 100 years and that's that.
Right.
But a galaxy may go from millions of years.
Yeah.
Light years.
Yeah.
And this rock that I was looking at, you know, it may happen over millions of years,
that
it grows, you know.
Right.
Just like power. Yeah. So it does seem to have some spiritual aspect to it.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. Or we can put it this way, that a microbe that lives only for a few seconds, when he's told about a human being,
yeah,
you know, he'll think, oh, you know, how is it?
The time frame is different for you.
Right, exactly. Right, yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yes?
You mentioned that the body grows beyond to youth and old age. Thinking about it, does the I, the soul, change at all? Because to me, the internal dialogue changes. I mean, when I'm a little kid, I don't have the capacity to think critically or create unethical things. So,
yeah.
And then as I got older, my internal dialogue just sophisticated.
Okay.
Is that the soul changing, or is that more of the material?
Yeah, changing? Very good. Very good. Did everybody hear the question? Or should I? So the question is that you said that the body changes, and the soul is there. Now her question is, does the soul also change with the change of the body or with time, let's say. Very nice. Thank you very much. Yeah, here we have to understand that, you see, we have two types of material bodies. One is body made of gross matter. This body is a gross material body. Beyond that, we have a subtle material body, made of mind, intelligence, and ego, false ego. In Sanskrit, they are called man, buddhi, and ahankar. So this subtle body is also a material body. But beyond that is the soul. Right? The soul is actually the source of consciousness. Consciousness is emanating from the soul. And that consciousness, when we are materially projected, then that consciousness flows through the subtle body, that is mind. Let us to make it simple, the concept simple, just let's say through the mind or mental body. Let's put it this way. And then it flows through the senses and it is projected onto the external objects of the senses. Now, the gross body's change is more visible. Subtle body's change, the mind's change is more subtle. And beyond that, the soul is actually unchanging. These two bodies are changing. Like our gross body changes. Our mental body also changes. Our mental makeups, our psychological makeup changes. Right? But the soul remains the same. Like, in spite of all the changes, you are the same person. Aren't you? Like 5-year-old today that you are, your mentality has grown. Your mentality has maybe have changed. But you, as the person, are unchanging. And that soul is indestructible, imperishable, is eternal.
Is the mental body closer to the soul because it allows critical thinking and more than...
Yes, it is closer to the soul. Because soul's consciousness is first flowing through this mental body. And then it is coming to the gross body. Right? Like, for example, the act. But behind that act there is thinking. Then there is willing. Right? You think, then you decide, and then you act. So it is motivating. The subtle body is actually motivating the activities of the gross body. And it's a soul, not always controlled by the soul, but is actually the observer or the recipient. Like, you see, you may want to do so many things, but it always doesn't happen the way you want, right? Because we are not really the controller. We are being controlled by so many external factors. We want to do things. Sometimes it happens according to our plan. When it happens, we feel happy. When it doesn't happen according to our plan, we feel frustrated or angry. Right? Yes?
I was wondering, what does the soul look like? What are its characteristics?
Okay, very good, very good. What are the characteristics of the soul? The first characteristics of the soul that is perceivable to us is the consciousness. The consciousness is coming from the soul. Consciousness is not coming from the mind or from the brain. Brain is actually the seat of the mind. Now, the soul is the source of consciousness, right? Like, I am conscious. Where does the consciousness come from? It's coming from the soul. And then the characteristics or nature of the soul is, the soul is unchanging. It's eternal. It's imperishable. Matter is perishable. Our body is perishable. Our body is changing. But the soul doesn't change. The body can be killed. Soul cannot be killed. Body can be burned by fire or cut by weapon. Soul cannot be. Soul is eternal. And that soul is non-material. The soul is spiritual. Yes, yes. Very good. Soul has a shape when it is situated in its spiritual identity. But when we lose our spirit, see, the soul is a spiritual entity. When it loses its spiritual spiritual characteristics or spiritual nature and comes into the material nature, then it loses its spiritual identity. And it becomes just like a tiny little spark, a speck of consciousness, which is in the body. In the body, the soul doesn't have its original spiritual form. The point is, the soul is spiritual, so its form is spiritual. But when it loses its spiritual identity, that form is lost. But when the soul becomes situated in a spiritual identity, that is, when the soul reestablishes its relationship with its spiritual origin, you can say supreme soul, then that relationship with the supreme soul gives rise to its spiritual form.
So what is the spiritual form look like?
It will depend. Like, say somebody develops a relationship with God, who is the Supreme Soul. When we develop our relationship with Him, according to that relationship, our spiritual form takes its shape. Say, just to give a simple example, like if somebody feels that God is his friend, then he takes a shape of a boy. The soul, in that context, its form or its shape is like that of a boy. But if somebody feels that the God is her lover, right? Then, due to that relationship, that soul will develop the form of a girl. So in this way, in the spiritual world, there are different identity according to the relationship with the Lord.
Also,
it can take many different shapes. And now here also...
Does it also take a reflection in the material world?
I was just coming to that point, actually. The thing is, you see, material world is the realm where we are trying to project our ideas, our will, and we are trying to dictate the condition according to that. Whereas in the spiritual world, it is the God's will that we all are subjected to. His will prevails there. And there our relationship is not according to what we want, but the way He wants us. And we all are surrendered to His will. And accordingly, we get our shape. And we are perfectly situated in that situation. We are perfectly happy just being related to Him in whichever way He wants us to be.
In our culture, we typically say, I have a soul. I kind of suspect that maybe it's the other way around, that the soul may have a body or a mind.
No. Yeah, well, you can put it that way also.
The soul is the original power.
Yeah.
How can the mind say, I got a soul?
No, not I got a soul, I am the soul.
Yeah.
Right? I am the soul. And that, me, has assumed this body. Right? And I am functioning through this body. It is my body. I am not this body, but it's my body. And who am I? I am the soul. That is my actual identity. Yes?
When somebody encounters racism, and yet they look, the whole of society is being racist to them, and yet they look in the mirror and they see beauty. They're looking at their own soul, their own emanation. Is that what they see when they see beauty? I mean, is this how people rise above, like, whatever people tell them is something innate within them that
It will depend from which perspective you're looking at it. I was just to make this point, simplify this point. Like, say, there may be, someone may be very beautiful, and you may feel attracted. Oh, he's such a beautiful person. But then, when you have encounter with that person, then you see that, although apparently he looks so beautiful, but he's so cruel. He, instead of making you feel, you know, attracted to him, he's repulsing you. But then another person, he may not be so apparently beautiful, but, you know, he does something to you. At the time of your distress, he comes and extends his helping hand. And then you appreciate him even more than the other person, right? So, yeah, here you can see, like, what really matters is not our sense perception, but what is happening to us as individual in relation to each other, right? So that way, you know, it goes beyond those apparent visible perception. And ultimately what it matters is our, you know, our, say, our spiritual encounter.
Are they able to experience a part of what the Creator experiences?
Yes. Yes, because
that
then
self-realized
means to be tuned into His consciousness.
Okay.
Right. So when you are tuned into His consciousness, then you are actually seeing things from His perspective, His point of view. Right. But when you are separated from Him, then we are seeing things from our limited perspective. Yes?
Okay, I have a question. The Vedas, Upanishads, all those speak of inner world, the corresponding chakra points and all those things. So how does that fit with your worldview?
Well, you mentioned a few things. Now my question is, what's your understanding of those points? You mentioned certain things, like we have to first understand what they actually mean, right? Our views are completely in tune with that. Okay, as you said, as you mentioned chakras, right? The chakras are different different points in our spinal column. It is, let's put it this way, we may say the brain center is the seat of the mind. It is actually the center of our nervous system. All the nerves are ending into different senses, right? So all the nerves are actually ending different senses. There are five senses. And the center of all those five senses, eyes, ears, nose, touch, and tongue, The seat of that is the mind, which is considered to be the inner sense, internal sense. And the nervous system from the brain center is coming down through the spinal column, right? And then it spreads throughout the body. Okay. Now, in the nervous, at the bottom of the nervous column, nervous system or the spinal column is a point which is called Muladhara, which is actually, you can say, the basic point of our sense perceptions, right? And then there is a chakra above that, which is, say, you can say parallel to or opposite to the reproductive organ, the genitals. Then the one beyond that is against the navel. The one above that is against the heart. The one above that is against the neck. One above that is against the between the eyebrows, the center of the eyes. And the final one is the brain center. Now generally what happens is, for a normal, ordinary living entities, the spiritual energy, right, functions between the Muladhara, the base point, to the reproductive organ. So most of their activities are generally limited to that. But those who are spiritually motivated, their thing, they go beyond that chakra. And that is why it is so important to overcome sex desire to make spiritual advancement. So celibacy, practically in every religion, they accept that celibacy is the most vital criteria for spiritual advancement. We have to overcome a sex desire. And otherwise what happens, that vital energy just goes out of the body through the act of sex. When one is able to control that, then his energy rises above that point and eventually it comes to the brain center. And there, you see, as it rises up through that channel, called Sushumna. As it rises, the one becomes more and more enlightened. And the ultimate enlightenment in that sense happens when it reaches the brain center. Right? So in this way, all understandings, all concepts are perfectly in harmony with the proper spiritual understanding. There is no discord. Even also, even if the material activities are in perfect harmony with that, provided it is channelized in the right direction. Okay? Yes? Yeah, right. Same. Like electricity, electricity, in different languages it may be identified as different, by different names, but the substance electricity, the energy electricity is electricity, right? Similarly, the soul may be identified in different languages by different names, but in substance it's the same. Free will. Yeah, free will means the freedom to decide, isn't it? Your freedom to decide what you want to do. Yes, you have your free will. But if that will is properly directed, then you'll benefit. If it is misdirected, then you lose. Then you hurt yourself. So you have the free will to decide what you want to do. After you finished your school, you had the free will to decide whether you'll go to Harvard or you'll go to Cambridge. Right? Now you decide what's going to be of ultimate benefit for you. Or yes, again, you know, the consideration will be whether one is moving in the right direction or wrong direction. Right? As you said, like, educate yourself or enrich yourself. With what? With what? Say... Yeah. Right. So the point here will be, the point that I was actually trying to make is that the activities that take us close to God is for our benefit. The activities that take us away from God is harmful. Right? Like, because we are His parts and parcels. Now, say for example, you have a very rich father. Now you have the free will whether you want to be with your father or reject your father. Now, if you stay with your father, develop your proper relationship with him, then you'll derive the benefit from him. But if you decide to go away from him, then you are inviting miseries for yourself. So in that sense, he is our Supreme Father. And we have a father who is the supreme, powerful, who is omniscient, who is omnipresent, who is omnipotent, and he is our dearmost friend. So why shouldn't we develop our relationship with him? And by developing our relationship, we can only benefit. Our life becomes joyful. But when we reject him and go away from him, then we invite miseries for ourselves. Like, we rejected the rich father, and we are on our own. Now I have to fend for myself. I have to pay for all my bills myself. Now it's going to be, you consider how wonderful that's going to be, or how painful that is going to be, how distressful that's going to be. Yes?
How can I listen to my soul?
How can you listen to your soul?
Yeah.
Right. Yes, that's why you need a guide. Who can guide you to determine which is the dictates of your mind and which is the dictations of the Lord. And the thing is that the Lord is there in the heart of everyone. He is there. He is so fond of us. He's so caring. Just like a father, the child may go to the play in the field, but the father sits by the park in a bench and watches the child. Similarly, he is watching us. And he's waiting when you are going to turn our face towards him. And when you do, then immediately he comes and picks us up. But as long as we want to play in the field, he said, okay, play. Yes?
So you're saying that spirituality is essentially the science of understanding the soul and higher being. So what are the methods of investigating and studying that? And
oh, very good. Yes. You see, when we recognize that this subject is important, then we have to study, right? And in order to study, yes, books are there that actually reveal the informations about that reality. That then teachers are there who can actually guide us, you know, following the curriculum. And in this way, when we study the subject properly, then yes, we become enriched with this knowledge. Like any other subject, you know, like whatever, I mean, when you want to study the subject, when you want to master the subject, then we have to study specific books under the guidance of qualified teachers. I, for myself, I can tell you, I was a total fool. I was in total ignorance. But then, fortunately, I came across my teacher. How? Well, since you asked me, you see, I was in Europe. I'm Indian. I'm born Indian. I was in Europe, and thinking that studying those subjects is the ultimate goal of life. But then there I started to probe into the books on spiritual subject matter. Like, it all started, like, you know, my friends would question me about India, and they had some misconception about India, and I used to defend the glory of India. But then while doing that, I realized how little I knew about India myself. And then I started to study, and as I started to go deeper into it, I started to become more and more fascinated by it. And then I felt that now I have to go back to India and pursue this path. And so I went back to India, and I started to search for a teacher who could teach me in that subject. And I searched for 1 year, couldn't find a teacher. Teacher means I couldn't find somebody to whom I could surrender myself completely with the full conviction that here is a person who can give me the knowledge. And then a time came when I almost gave up my search. And not almost, I did give up my search in total, being totally frustrated, totally disillusioned, thinking that I can't find anyone like that. And I felt that if I do have a teacher, then let him come and pick me up. All this while I had been searching for him and I couldn't find him. So if I really have a teacher, then let him come and pick me up. And then I got a book by who is my guru. And as I started to read the book, it just dawned in me that this is what I was searching for. But still I had some doubt, some apprehension, that what if this is not the right one that I'm pursuing? And then I thought that, okay, I'll give it 2 months. If I don't find it worth its while, I'll give it up after 2 months. And 33 years went by, and I'm still on this path. And every passing day, my conviction is becoming stronger and stronger. And this is the thing, you know, like when you come across the right teacher, then it happens automatically, you know, you become aware that here is a person who is going to take me by my hand and take me to this world. So that's how it happened, that's how I found it. And to tell you frankly, from the very first page of that book, it just occurred to me that this is it that I was searching for. Previously, I didn't know actually what I was searching for. I had a vague idea, but then it happened that this is what it is. Yes?
So, how do you quantify your progress through this discipline of spirituality?
Okay, very good point. the first thing is that internally you become more peaceful. That is one indication that you are on the right path. And then as you keep on progressing, like, you know, it becomes more and more confirmed, more and more justified. Like it comes, like say for example, you know, as I was saying, like you start off with a faith, A is A and B is B. Then, you know, when you start reading B-A-T bat, C-A-T cat, then it is justified that A is A and B is B. And then you start reading further, right? And, you know, like, it, in this way, your preliminary faith of accepting A is A and B is B becomes systematically established and verified. It is, I mean, as I said, like, it's an internal development, you know, like, which you feel yourself. Like, just, you know, I mean, I just thought of one example. Like, when you're hungry, and when you eat, does somebody have to come and tell you what's happening? You feel it yourself. Like your hunger subsides, you know, your body becomes strong and your...
You did not mention the name of the book. I was wondering.
Yeah, the name of the book is Nectar of Devotion. Nectar of Devotion by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who is my spiritual master. Thank you all very much. It was a wonderful evening with you all. I was just telling them, when I came to America for the first time, that was in 1979, and the first outside program, the lecture program I did, was also in MIT.
Welcome back.
That was in seven. Thank you. And yes, many of you are not even born at that time. You're born in 79. Yes,
if more personal,
fine, yeah.
So we'll end the formal presentation.
What I'm interested in, and I, maybe a lot of the other people won't be as interested in, and it's a very material way in a lot of ways, is how you approach the things that you were working on the Middle East. You know, what countries, what people, what approach are you taking?
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually a group in UN called the U.S. Mission for Middle Eastern Peace. They kind of approached me to throw some light on how they can deal with that problem. And my personal approach to that was that first of all, we have to understand that God is one. It is not that Muslims have one God and the Jews have another God. It's the same God that they are actually worshipping. Yeah, right. So they don't know it, or is that awareness has to be created. It's ignorance that is causing them to fight. So knowledge or proper understanding is very, very important. Now, how long it will take or how effective that endeavor will be, we don't know. But there is no harm in trying to achieve that.
It'll happen.
Yes.
Yes. Well, another question that I have, because the Gita encourages you not to give up.
in general, when people in the West talk about nonviolence, they're only talking about the victim being nonviolent, but never the aggressor being nonviolent.
Mm-hmm.
And when the victim produces resistance, that is what's considered violent. Do you recognize, and yet the Gita exhorts you to not just it exhorts you to fight.
Yeah.
And in that sense, how do you feel about like the resistance?
Right. The thing is, you know, like if you counter violence with violence, it'll breed more violence. Therefore, the solution will be rather try to deal with violence with love. It'll take a lot of, you know, tolerance. It'll need a lot of sacrifice. But personally, I feel that's the only way we can actually deal with violence. Otherwise, in the way things are in today's world, the violence will simply breed violence. Through violence, we'll never be able to, you know, solve or quell violence.
So let me ask you this. In the Gita then, why did Krishna exhort Arjuna to fight? Why didn't he ask him to do something non-violent?
Yeah. That was a different age. Yeah. You see, at that time, the world was, there was monarchy in the world. Monarchy. The kings used to rule, right? And the kings used to establish the kingdom of God, right? As a representative of God, they used to rule the kingdom, right? But in the age of democracy, you know, it's not going to happen. Because a ruler, first of all, those who are ruling, they are not trained. They do not know how to rule. And besides that, they come for 5 to 10 years at the most. And then they have to vacate their seat. Somebody else will come. So, in a democratic system cannot really establish proper law and order. Nor can it establish, you know, proper system of prosperity and peace in the society.
So then is our responsibility to stay outside of government?
It's a very personal question.
Those people are unqualified to govern, and I will agree.
And you can see that so many people do not cast their vote for, you know, like, because they see that, you know, like, you know, right. And this is a very difficult age, you know. This is an age, in simple words you can say that this is the age where atheism prevails. Atheism. Atheism, atheistic, the, you know, non-belief, don't accept God.
But I think some of our victims accept God more. But I mean, even like all of the weapons are made in the United States, and then I'll stop. Even MIT is involved in making these weapons, and I just, it is such a responsibility that we are causing the violence. When I see other people, they are just the victims of this.
Right, yeah. Like you can't expect that the weapons will be made and they'll never be used. Someday they're going to be used. And when they're used, you can well imagine what will be the consequence. Like, anyway.
It's the biggest business is making weapons.
That's right, yeah. Right. Welcome.
Nobody would use them being a business.
Yeah, that's why they have to open up newer and newer war fronts. Right. Right, yeah.
Someone else who didn't ask a question?
Yeah.
Like, what is the cause of the swine flu?
The cause of?
The swine flu, like the
texts are called the Upanishads, just the four.
Like, what is the, like, everyone might see the, like, what do you think is the root cause of this?
Oh,
like, right.
I see. You see, the root cause is, you know, as you act, accordingly you have to be subjected to its reaction. Now, you know, if you act in an irresponsible way, if you act in a way that is causing harm to others, then eventually it's going to come back to you also. The reaction is going to, as you sow, so shall you reap. Like, so, you know, so much sinful activities are going on in this world. And how can we expect that there won't be any reaction to that? Therefore, civilized society should seriously consider which actions are beneficial and which actions are harmful. The actions that are beneficial, that gives us benefit, is called piety, pious activities. And those actions that cause us sufferings, that are sin. So the sufferings are coming as a result of our sinful activities.
If we all become vegetarians, there'll be no pigs and there'll be no slaughtering.
The thing is, that is one aspect. Just vegetarianism is one aspect of it, but there are other considerations also. That is not the only sinful act. The point is, you know, like, we can't, you know, inflict pain upon the innocent animals and feel that there is not going to be any reaction. Like, even biologically we can consider, you know, when an animal is slaughtered, it feels the pain. That pain actually permeates throughout every single cell of its body. Now when somebody eats that flesh, those cells, he's also eating the pain that the animal has experienced.
People just see, I believe that even plants have a spirit.
Yeah, but they don't have that high degree of sensitivity to feel the pain.
I don't know. I'm not a plant, you know.
Well, the thing is, no, anyway, it's common. Well, I mean, the thing is, when you're killing a cow, the cow will shriek. Where, when you cut a cabbage, it doesn't cry out to you. Another thing is that to be a vegetarian, you don't have to always kill the plant.
If I kill a fly, it doesn't squeak either.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you magnify, then you will hear.
Yeah.
You magnify the sound vibration,
and
but the degree will be less. Like the way a cow shrieks and a fly shrieks, there's a big difference between that. Yes? There's no difference of soul. Soul is soul. Soul is a spiritual entity. It's a body. The soul is the same, but the body is different. Like, the body, again, two types of bodies, subtle body and the gross body.
Well, as far as I can know, I have an animal soul.
No, as I said, the soul is neither human nor animal. It's the body that is animal or human or tree or plant.
Well, then what separates human beings?
His consciousness, his degree of consciousness.
And the consciousness is not connected to the soul.
Okay, good. So it needs a little explanation. The consciousness is coming from the soul. But there are five different kinds of layers of consciousness or degrees of consciousness. One is covered consciousness. Like the trees and plants, they fall in the category of covered consciousness. They have consciousness, but that consciousness is almost covered. Only when you very minutely analyze, then you perceive that yes, they have consciousness. Then the next is the shrunken state of consciousness. From insects to animals, they fall in the shrunken state of consciousness. It's quite apparent that they are conscious, but their consciousness is in a shrunken state. Then comes the bud state of consciousness. A bud apparently is in a shrunken state, but the bud has the ability to bloom, and the human beings fall in that category. Like the apparently human consciousness also is in a shrunken state, but human beings have the ability to expand their consciousness, like a bud has the ability to bloom into a flower. Now, for a bud to bloom into a flower, it needs two conditions. One is the shelter of the water and the rays of the sun. So when human beings become exposed to God under the guidance of a qualified teacher, then his consciousness begins to blossom. So that's the fourth stage of consciousness, and then when he is fully conscious of God or fully situated in his spiritual identity, then that is called the fully bloomed state of consciousness. So there are different kinds of consciousness depending upon different types of bodies.
So would you say that developing that consciousness should be a priority?
Yes. Yeah, especially when you get the human form of life.
So then when you say that anything that participates in that development of that higher consciousness is
a
good thing?
Yeah. The thing is that, you know, then he remains in a shrunken state of consciousness, depriving himself of the ability to expand his consciousness or blossom.
Anything that helps elevate the consciousness is a good thing?
Yeah, sure.
That includes proper nutrition.
Yeah, spiritual
nutrition.
The spiritual nutrition, as I said, like exposure to God under the guidance of a qualified teacher. This is the food. And, you know, submission to the Lord and accepting whatever you're getting as Lord's mercy, that is the food. You see, exposure to God means becoming aware of Him and feel His presence. How He is taking care of me. How He is taking care of everybody. Yes?
Right.
That Buddha is the supreme personality of God. Buddha is God. Buddha himself is God.
In that thing.
Yeah, same. Thank you all very much. Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, the soul, you see, soul is always good, but soul can be in a good or bad situation. Right. Like depending on how one is acting, how one is leading himself, guiding himself. And as I said, like ultimate consideration of good is that takes us too close to God is good. That takes us away from God is bad. Now a soul, being a part and parcel of God, should go to God. Then only he will also develop his godly qualities or spiritual qualities. Like a spark. Spark is fire. Right? But when the spark comes out of the fire, it loses its fiery qualities. It falls in a heap of ash, it becomes ash. right? Losing all his fiery qualities. But when that speck of spark is taken back to the fire, it becomes fire again. It regains its fiery qualities. Similarly, we all are spiritual. But when we become isolated from the Supreme Spiritual Personality, God, then we lose our spiritual qualities, which is eternity, knowledge and bliss. But when we become connected to the Lord, then we regain those qualities back again. Like eternity, we all are eternal. We are immortal. We are never going to die. Soul never going to die. The soul is full of knowledge. And soul is full of joy, provided it is connected to the Lord. But when it is isolated from the Lord, then what happens? The soul identifies himself with the body. And the body, through the body, he wants to get the spiritual qualities of eternity, knowledge and bliss. But he cannot. This body will never become eternal or immortal. The body can never become full of knowledge, nor can it become full of joy or bliss. The simplest way is re-establish your relationship with God. And these qualities will automatically manifest. Thank you.
Let's thank the speaker.